But doesn't this, there's confusion of what the bill is about. Doesn't this clarify what the bill is about? So what are we talking about? No one understands we're talking about this. I don't understand how this relates to this.
That called, one of the people that were invited, they said that they would rather speak in the public hearings. I said, no. Tell them that we are not at that stage yet. It's unfortunate that then that's how they understood, but they were explained where the process is. And because that's where we are today. We have got two apologies. Honorable Iman Sheikh, who is in Botswana attending an AIDS summit, and one of our members, Honorable Musala, who yesterday lost his father, and he had to go back home. He was here, he had to go back home. And we have also got Honorable Skippers, who's also not well, book of sick. Those are the apologies that we are having for today. Honorable Vonnegut.
Thank you, Chairperson. Just to say that the Honorable James will be coming. He'll just be a little bit late. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much. We are house rules. Our phones, even to guests, our phones will be off or on silent, please. Guests are not participating in this session. If they want to ask questions, they will ask questions at a time, either when we break for tea. We are then going to, for the benefit of those that are coming for the first time in front of the portfolio committee, we are going to make introductions. It's honorable members first that are going to introduce themselves using the mic, and then it will be presenters and whoever they will introduce themselves. It will be the department, and finally it will be our guests. So that is that will then be the process. I will hand over to honorable members for them to introduce themselves, and then it will be in the order that I have then outlined. Thank you very much. I will start with myself. I am Lindelwa Tunjwa. I'm the chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Health. On my left is Ms. Vuyoka Zimachalamba, who is the secretary of the Portfolio Committee. At the back, on my extreme left, is Ms. Ngomani, our content advisor, Mr. Zubair, who is our researcher, and the lady who is giving us documents, Mbali, and Mbali, and then Ms. Selina, who is also part of the committee. I will hand over to honorable members to introduce themselves. Honorable members, honorable James, they are just beside
the... Good morning. I'm Mabatu Mukause, representing the Economic Freedom Fighters. I'm a member of this portfolio committee.
Honorable members will...
Good morning, everybody. My name is Maisela. I'm the member of this portfolio committee. Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Heinrich Bolmink. I'm a member of the committee.
Good morning, Chair. Good morning, everybody. My name is Naren Singh. I'm a member of parliament and the person promoting the private member's bill on behalf of the late Dr. Ambrosini.
Okay, good morning, everybody. My name is Fish Mahlalela.
Good morning. I'm Professor Valipina. I'm from the University of Stellenbosch, and I'm here on invitation from the chairperson.
Sorry, sir. We are still members of...
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yes,
my name is Roman James, and I'm a member of the committee.
Thank you.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Nonsan Tsimudendaba. I'm the member of this committee.
All right, our guests.
Good morning, everybody. My name is Torin Wing. I represent the Ambrosini Ford Foundation.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Rob Moore. I represent the Cancer Treatment Campaign, one of the consulting bodies on the Medical Innovation Bill.
Morning, honorable members. My name is Tarikas Tasson, Minister of Health.
Good morning, honorable members. My name is Cindy Le from National Department of Health.
Morning, honorable members. Azil Gangadin, South African Medical Research Council, Stakeholder Affairs.
Morning, members. Makua, I'm from Minister of Health.
Morning, honorable members. I'm Anvin Pele from the National Department of Health.
Morning, honorable members. Kosuna Tibuga from the Medical Research Council, Legal and Compliance Services.
Good morning, honorable members. Charles Perry, the Director of the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the Medical Research Council.
Good morning, honorable members. Bronwyn Myers from the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the South African Medical Research Council.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Glenda Gray. I'm the President and CEO of the South African Medical Research Council.
We have got guests.
Good morning, honorable members. Anthony Rees from the Traditional and Natural Health Alliance.
Good morning, honorable members.
Advocate Anthony Mitchell, Chief of Staff, Inkatha Freedom Party.
Good morning, Michael Prince, Parliamentary Legal Services.
Good morning, I'm Tavi Singh from TMG.
Good morning, honorable members. I'm Catherine Tomlinson from Doctors Without Borders.
Ms. Debson, you must give us your full Debson.
Apologies, I'm Tabson Kumalo from PMG.
Thank you very much, honorable members and our guests. You will then have noticed that the composition of our guests is precisely because we said we'll invite people that will then make presentation, the research, the people that have got the expertise who are then going to take us through, because that is where we are in terms of today's interactions and the brief in as far as the agenda is concerned. We are joined, I can see the other gentleman is from the media, I'm not quite sure with the other lady if she can indicate using the mic so that we are able to know who is here. Trying to get a seat, can you please introduce yourself and yourself also, the two of you that has just come in?
Sorry?
Can you use the mic and introduce yourself?
Yeah. This is Professor Adjamani from Sfakumakhatu Health Sciences University.
Okay. On my extreme left, there against the wall is Moses, who's part of the portfolio of the committee administration, who is also in the research unit. are going to get a presentation from the advocate Nkosinathi Buka. He is the one in this in my screen. That's what he's saying. I think that that's how it has then been set up. So we will hand over to you, and so that you take us through. And yeah, over to you.
Thank you, Honourable Chair. Also. The honourable members for affording the MRC an opportunity to share insights on the bill. I have a bit of flu, so I might not be coming out very clearly. So just my apologies for that. So yes, I am Advocate Nkosinathi Buka. So I'll be talking to the first part of the MRC's presentation, which is the legal considerations. Honourable Chair and the members, we have prepared a more fully reasoned document for the consideration of the House, and also to just close gaps to what I'll be talking to in my slides. The slides are really an attempt to try and be economic with time in terms of shortening what is in the content of the more fully reasoned document. So we started by looking at basically why should the MRC express opinion or share insights on the bill. So if one has regard to the MRC as an entity established in terms of an Act of Parliament, if one considers Section 3 and 4 of the SAMRC Act, they set out the objectives and the functions of the MRC. So by virtue of those sections, the MRC is basically or effectively a public custodian of health or medical research in the South African context. And it is for that reason that we felt it was properly conceived for the MRC to share insights on the bill. So we looked at the number of things from a legal point of view. We first looked at the objectives of the bill and considered them against certain legal principles. So the first thing that we considered was what is the position currently in law in South Africa with respect to cannabis or cannabinoids or derivatives thereof. It was clear when we looked at various parts of the law applicable to this subject that the law is almost certain or settled currently in that cannabinoids or cannabis is an unlawful substance. We will talk to that as we go through the slides in terms of reference to specific laws that deal with the subject matter. And also, Professor Perry will address some of the issues that we feel that from a content point of view would need to be investigated and addressed further before a more firm position is adopted on the bill. We looked at the definitions section of the bill and more interestingly we considered the phrase or the definition of treatment in the bill. Without reading the fuller definition in the bill, but we were more interested in certain of the aspects listed there in terms of what treatment would be, and we're more interested in the concept of curing. Now, we examined various instruments, and we realized that from a definitions point of view, and to avoid having situations of difficulty with enforcement, the definition of treatment, especially in as far as it includes curing, may need some refinement. Our view is that in legal terms, curing is a more definitive concept. So if an assertion is made to suggest that the cannabis or cannabinoids will, among other things, cure the particular ailments, it needs to be a firm medical decision. So we felt that to that extent, the definition of treatment would need to be refined further. We also had regard to the proposed concept of pilot health centers. We have no specific call it objection, or we don't foresee adverse impact in establishing the health centers, the pilot health centers. But what we do think that we may want to share with the portfolio committee is that in the consideration of the establishment of those health centers, there needs to be some further thinking in the governance of those. One of the things we are proposing is that if one has regard to the National Health Act in terms of what it sets as standards and requirements for purposes of health research, we felt that it may assist if the bill were to provide for the consultation with the Medical Research Council, the Office of Health Standards Compliance, in as far as it oversees health facilities or establishments, as well as the National Ethics and Research Committee Council. Sorry. So we felt that in the process whereby the minister may designate certain facilities as pilot health centers, it would be helpful for the minister to consult with the bodies that we've listed there. We also felt that it may assist if those bodies or one of them has an oversight role over the pilot health centers. sorry. So we looked at issues of governance. As I have previously referred to the National Health Act, Section 11 of the National Health Act provides for certain governance processes for purposes of health research conducted at health establishments or facilities. So we thought that there may be a need to provide in the bill more extensively on the governance of the health centers. We also considered that there may be some other governance instruments that the bill would need to be aligned to. We specifically thought that the informed consent provided for in terms of the National Health Act will have to feature in the bill to the extent that the particular patients who may want to utilize this intervention will have to, especially because it would be in the form of pilot or testing or research, it would be important for those patients to be protected by way of having to consent to that, to such treatment. We also had consideration of the PROPI Act, the Promotion of Personal Information Act, which prescribes or set out requirements for purposes of gathering, usage, and disposition of personal information of people. So we felt that to the extent that the relevant patients, because this is not going to be an open-ended intervention, but used in specific circumstances under specific considerations, it would be useful to align the bill with the POPI Act for purposes of the information of the persons. And obviously the Consumer Protection Act as well, we felt that there would be a need to align the governance requirements in the bill with the Consumer Protection Act. We also, in examining the bill, foresaw a potential constitutional challenge with respect to the medical practitioner. You will recall that the bill proposes to prescribe that the persons who can administer or dispense or prescribe or treat using cannabis or cannabinoids would be medical practitioner in the manner defined in the Health Professions Act. Now, what we call a potential or possible constitutional challenge is with respect to other health professions. In particular, we considered, for example, professions falling under the Allied Health Professions Council. We were advised that some of those professions do consider certain of the ingredients or components of cannabis or cannabinoids as useful interventions in their scope of practice. Now, we felt that given that the law recognizes those professions, and probably the non-use of cannabis or cannabinoids in their scope of practice is limited by the current general law, which specifically makes it illegal to use it. So if the window in this form of the bill is opened for cannabinoids to be legalized, those professions might put a case forward to say, but we also are recognized health professionals. We've got a scope of practice recognized by law, and this particular plant or intervention, it is also something that is in our scope, but for the illegality of it. So we felt that there may be a need to consider taking, at the very least, a constitutional certification, if you like, from the Office of the Chief State Law Advisor to say, to advise whether or not there may be strong prospects if such challenge were to be mounted. And obviously, if there is a reasonable prospect in such challenge, then the House would have to consider to refine further the definition of a medical practitioner. I've already highlighted that in South African law, the cannabinoids or cannabis use of is illegal. So in respect of that, there are certain, we call it consequential amendments. There are certain laws who currently makes it illegal for cannabis or cannabinoids to be utilized for various reasons. So those laws will have to be amended by way of consequential amendments in order to be aligned to the purposes of the bill, so that you do not have conflicting laws and you have battles with enforcement at a later stage. We just want to also, which is something we think that the Honorable House is probably acutely aware of, that South Africa is a signatory to the Single Convention on Narcotic Drugs of 1961, which is the international instrument that sets the restrictions or probably in certain instances the prohibition on the usage of cannabis. So we felt that to the extent that the proposed bill may vary South Africa's commitment in terms of that international instrument, the committee will have to consider how far it may, in terms of its commitment to that international instrument, how far it may change its position currently. So basically, our case is that in law there is certainty, and it is a settled law that cannabis is at this point in time an unlawful substance. We feel that it may not be as settled in the medical or health profession or practice, and the certainty needs to be achieved in that space by way of various investigations, and that certainty will then assist the legal instrument, because one thing you don't want to have is to have a legal instrument that is very difficult to administer or to enforce because the practicalities on the ground do not talk to the instrument. I thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you very much, Advocate. We are now going to hand over, not unless members, I just want to check if are there any clarities in terms of the legal part, or should we also then get a representation and then combine all the questions? Can I check with the, by the nodding is saying fine, let's continue. We will now hand over to Professor Charles Perry to take us through.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I'm going to give the health or medical viewpoint from the Medical Research Council, covering five aspects in my presentation. First of all, give some background, then talk very briefly about what is medical cannabis. Thirdly, the legality of medical use of cannabis. Fourthly, should we consider the use of cannabis for medical purposes, focusing on the criteria that are used for any other medication, effectiveness, safety, cost-effectiveness of medical cannabis, supply and regulation, the route of administration, and then end up with two slides which really conclude the MRC's viewpoints on this matter. So I've got 23 slides to go through, and I'll stick with the points that I've put in the slides quite carefully because we've thought about the wording. So who am I? I've already said I'm the director of the Alcohol, Tobacco and Other Drug Research Unit at the MRC, where I've been employed since 2001. I'm a registered clinical and research psychologist with the Health Professions Council. And in June 2014, my colleague Professor Bronwyn Myers and I wrote an article in the South African Medical Journal on the topic of medical cannabis. You can see a little picture of it on the right-hand side there. And we've updated slightly our position on that, but it's very much what was written in that original article, which we worked on following the bill being presented to Parliament. My first exposure to medical cannabis, in fact, was in 2000 when I met Dr. Raphael Mitschulam in Hanover, Germany, where we were both giving a presentation at the Millennium Medicine Meets Millennium Conference in Hanover, Germany. And we had a chance to talk as presenters. And he was the Israeli scientist who isolated Delta-9 tetrahydrocannabinol, THC, which I'll refer to later on, which is the main psychoactive constituent of the cannabis plant in its pure form. He spoke to me at that time about the benefits of cannabinoids in reducing brain swelling in trauma patients, and that sort of got me thinking a bit about the medical uses of a drug which we tend to see only as an illegal substance. As you all know, honourable members, on the 19th of February last year, the IFP MP Mario Ariani of Ambrosini made an impassioned plea to President Zuma and Parliament to legalise the medical use of cannabis. And he informed Parliament of his intention to introduce a private members' bill, which is called the Medical Innovation Bill, to move that agenda forward. And President Zuma, in response, indicated that he'd asked the Minister of Health to look into the matter. So let's look at the purposes of the bill, and there were five purposes that are set out. We need to remind ourselves what they are. Firstly, to codify existing best practices as to decisions by medical practitioners to innovate in cases where evidence-based treatment or management is not optimal or appropriate because the available evidence is insufficient or uncertain. And certainly as a medical research council, we are interested in evidence. That's our business, part of our business. Secondly, the purpose of the bill is to enhance certainty and clarity for medical practitioners and others regarding the criteria to be applied in determining whether to innovate in the cases referred to in subsection 1. Thirdly, to encourage responsible innovation in medical treatment and management by supporting reasonable and logical clinical decisions. And I think it's opening up the whole area of innovation, which could go far beyond what's in the existing bill. Fourthly, and we support this, to deter reckless, illogical, and unreasonable departure from standard practice. And fifthly, to legalize and regulate the use of cannabinoids for medical purposes and for beneficial commercial and industrial uses. And I'll refer to that, the part I've underlined later as well. So the bill certainly, as I've indicated there, seeks to do more than just promote medical innovation. It has a subsidiary aim of promoting legalization in general. And I think that part is problematic. It should really seek to do one or the other. And it complicates things by having them in the same legislation, because they are really very separate issues. Even if cannabis was legal, it would not mean we should be using it as a medicine. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't look into that or move forward on that agenda. I'm just saying there are two separate issues. On a positive note, it does seek to facilitate more medical research on medical cannabis, and we certainly strongly support that as a medical research council. But it only seeks to promote a limited type of research, medical treatment for patients suffering from various conditions, rather than for promoting a much broader array of research. And we think there's an opportunity here that should be opened up, looking beyond just the narrow issue of treatment for certain patients. So what is medical cannabis? It refers to the use of cannabis and constituent cannabinoids, including THC and cannabidiol, CBD, as therapy to treat or alleviate symptoms of medical conditions. And my previous The previous speaker made some reference to the differences between alleviating symptoms and treatment or cure, and I'll be coming back to that as well. In some countries, synthetic cannabinoids, such as nabilone, the trade name is Sesamet, or dronabinol, marinol, and I've put two pictures of what the containers containing those medications look like, are available for these purposes. Cannabinoids are delivered through various mechanisms, the most obvious being through smoking. However, smoking cannabis can be hazardous to health due to the toxic compounds created in the combustion process. And one even sees reference to this if you go onto websites which are promoting cannabis use. They will talk about, for example, using vaporizers in order to get a more pure form of cannabis so you don't have to smoke as much and you don't get some of the contaminants. So I think it's fairly widespread known that smoking cannabis can be hazardous to health. Furthermore, if you smoke a product, it's very difficult to regulate the amount of cannabinoids being ingested, the dosage. It's a very different kind of delivery mechanism to many other medications. However, users report that smoking is a very fast-acting delivery mechanism. Cannabinoids can also be ingested orally through the use of vaporizers or used transdermally through patches, and you'll see a patch there on someone's ankle, just above the ankle, and via suppositories, and a picture of suppositories at the top. Synthetic cannabis is most often delivered in pill form. The delivery mechanisms vary in cost and ease of access, and in South Africa, certainly smoking is the cheapest delivery mechanism for cannabis. It's the most easily accessible delivery mechanism, as cannabis is widely available to purchase, although you might risk arrest. Cannabis oil is also available on the black market, and you can find recipes on the internet for people seeking to make their own. And it doesn't sound very complicated, even for someone like myself, who's not a very good cook. The medical use of cannabis is now legal in Austria, Canada, Finland, Germany, Israel, Italy, Netherlands, Portugal, Spain. And the United States, medical use of cannabis in 20 states, plus the District of Columbia, are not prosecuted, so long as they are in compliance with the state's marijuana sale regulations. For example, in some states, they need a prescription. However, in South Africa, it's currently illegal to possess cannabis or to trade in it. We have no medicines approved by the Medicines Control Council that contain THC, other cannabinoids, or even synthetic cannabinoids. Cannabis has also not been approved for medical use by the U.S. Federal Drug Administration, and there are three reasons for this. Firstly, the FDA believes there's a lack of human clinical trials showing the benefits outweigh the risks. Secondly, they refer to inconsistencies in the main chemical compound, especially when smoked. And thirdly, they refer to the negative health effects sometimes associated with cannabis use, especially when smoked. And I went on the website yesterday, and this is still the standing position of the FDA. So should we consider the use of cannabis for medical purposes in South Africa? The use of cannabis for medical or other purposes was prohibited in South Africa more than 60 years ago, at a time when scientific knowledge about it was scarce. It's now clear that cannabis has medical utility. We put that on the record. But this has largely been overlooked, with research and society's attention being directed to the hazards of recreational use rather than to the medical benefits. Certainly in South Africa, that's been the overwhelming situation. Consideration of policy for medical cannabis should, as I've said before, be kept separate from consideration about recreational cannabis, except insofar as increasing medical cannabis might increase recreational use, and I will refer to evidence for or against that. The critical question for approval of any medicine are evidence of effectiveness, does it work? Safety, is it safe to use? Thirdly, cost effectiveness. Fourthly, supply, how are you going to produce it? Supply regulation. And the route of administration, how you ingest it. And I'm going to go through each of those in turn, because cannabis deserves the respect of being looked at in terms of, you know, whether it, how it meets each of these criteria. Firstly, effectiveness. And most of the data here has focused on symptom management rather than on curing conditions, rather than on treatment. And the evidence is mixed. Mr. Ariani Ambrosini referred to studies from Harvard, a respected university, cited in the cannabis position paper, which was presented to the Central Drug Authority in November 2013. And I put a snapshot of the front page of that report, which you may or may have seen. This report highlights various studies, mainly preclinical, which refers, as I've said there with the asterisk, to research done in test tubes, looking at effect of cannabis on cell cultures and animal studies, but some involving human subjects that showed positive effects on a variety of conditions, Alzheimer's disease, amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, chronic pain, multiple sclerosis, diabetes mellitus, dystonia, fibromyalgia, incontinence, gastrointestinal disorders, and various cancers, including lung cancer. And that's certainly quite an impressive list of conditions where the paper refers to having some positive effects. And if you go to the Mayo Clinic's website, which I did yesterday to check that it was still there, what it said about this, it lists various conditions and the evidence of cannabis in terms of addressing those conditions. And it ranks them from A to, I think, F, where A is like excellent, almost incontrovertible evidence in support of, B is good evidence, and C, it gets worse. And for treatment of chronic pain and multiple sclerosis, the Mayo Clinic says there is good evidence in support of cannabis having some positive effects. So certainly it's something we cannot wish away or dismiss, and we have to look at very seriously. Continuing to look at the effectiveness, does it work? Cannabinoids are often used for symptom management, palliative care in cancer. And with regard to pain relief in cancer patients, in experimental models of acute pain, inhaled cannabis resulted in dose-dependent pain relief. In patients with chronic pain, both cannabis and cannabinoids outperformed placebo treatment, which is sort of just giving them a fake medication. However, few studies have compared cannabis or cannabinoids with conventional medications. And this research was conducted in 2008, and I think that the field has moved slightly forward in the 7 years since then. With regard to the effects of cannabis or cannabis extracts on AIDS wasting syndrome, certainly something which is hugely important in South Africa, a Cochrane review, which included authors from the Medical Research Council, found that 7 studies included in the review suffered from bias and small sample size. That is all 7 studies. That's all they could find. And they lacked longitudinal data, limiting the extent to which conclusions could be drawn. What this means is that they're saying that the evidence is not strong enough right now to say that it's really effective, but that doesn't mean that it's not effective, and that more research was in the conclusions, that we really need longer studies with bigger sample sizes, and we may well find that it plays a very useful role. Evidence is stronger with regard to the positive effects of cannabinoids in treating chemotherapy-induced nausea and vomiting in cancer patients, which is a huge burden that patients on cancer treatment experience, having nausea and vomiting. And human studies suggest the efficacy of cannabinoids in the management of chemically induced nausea and vomiting. But they do say, and this is a 2014 published article, that further research aimed at developing new endocannabinoid-based anti-nausea and anti-emetic therapies is still warranted. So they're saying, yes, there's something there, but they recommend further research. As I said, Professor Myers and I wrote a paper which was published in the South African Medical Journal last year, And since writing that paper, I've spoken to colleagues internationally about what's being discussed in South Africa. And one of them in Australia pointed me to a German review published in 2014, with the front page is published on the right-hand side there, which found 84 favorable and only 9 unfavorable controlled studies assessing the potential for cannabis or cannabinoids for addressing half a dozen conditions. Certainly, that's a lot of studies, with most of them in favor. So if you look at this paper, they looked at 4 conditions: spasticity, secondly nausea and vomiting due to psychostasis. Okay, cancer drugs. Loss of appetite and weight loss, and chronic pain. You've got to go to medical school for about 8 years to learn how to pronounce these these complicated conditions. And I spent more than 8 years in school, but not in medical school. So certainly what they found was, if you look at the studies there, and they looked at the different drugs, most of them are synthetic or synthetic, and they found overwhelmingly positive studies. So certainly that made me look at a new look at the data. But when we were looking through this paper more carefully, we did have concerns about the study, and certainly my colleagues in Australia were saying, you know, the evidence is really there. Your country needs to move forward on this issue. You know, why aren't you moving forward? Well, we've looked at that paper in more depth, and we found a possible vested interest in showing the positive effects in this paper. The two authors consult for the pharmaceutical industry, and they have other links to cannabis-related associations. Secondly, they didn't undertake what we call a meta-analysis, where you pool the data across the studies and you look to see the strength of association, taking into account the strengths of the methods of the studies, which ones are showing a positive effects and which ones aren't. So that's a huge problem with this paper, before we can really say, yes, this is a definitive paper which should guide the South African government on this issue. But we should take it into consideration. We have no idea if there's actually a positive effect, taking all these studies into account, how homogenous the findings are, because they don't undertake this meta-study. They undertook no consideration of the quality of the studies. Perhaps the studies showing the positive effects were really well done and those showing a negative weren't, or the other way around. And we have no data from their paper to really evaluate the quality of the research. And certainly, South Africa, we cannot make decisions based on... We shouldn't be making decisions based on imperfect data. It's not a systematic review, but rather a selective literature review. We have no idea of the studies that were excluded or why. For example, they ignored 2 Cochrane reviews on this topic. There aren't very many Cochrane reviews, only about 3 or 4. But the 2 most important or relevant ones were the one on AIDS wasting syndrome, which I've referred to, and they've ignored that, and another study looking at the effects of cannabis on multiple sclerosis, which also found that the evidence was not strong enough to show a positive effect. They didn't show there wasn't an effect, but they seem to have ignored these studies, and I'm not sure why they weren't included in this review. There is very exciting emerging evidence that cannabinoids may have anti-cancer effects, particularly anti-tumor effects, shrinking tumors. And this is really very exciting for people working in the cancer field. And here we're looking beyond palliation at therapeutic effects. These are mainly preclinical studies, and few human trials have been published in this area. More trials are required to achieve certainty that cannabis or cannabinoids can be used as anti-cancer agents. Moving on to slide 16 of 23, so you know where we are. Looking at the safety of medical cannabis, how safe is it to use? Our own research, in fact, some of it's conducted by my own research, has shown associations between cannabis use and road traffic injuries and other forms of trauma. We found links with cannabis and crime, especially property crimes, murder crimes, and that was something that I was involved in the early 2000s, and looking at cannabis use and sexual HIV risk behaviors. But we need to be honest here. The research doesn't show a strong causal mechanism. It shows an association. Furthermore, unpublished research conducted at the SAMRC Stress and Anxiety Research Unit at Stellenbosch University using functional magnetic resonance imaging found cognitive deficits associated with cannabis use in young adolescents. I think they were all males, young adults in the early 20s, even after participants stopped using cannabis for several weeks. A recent review conducted by Wayne Hall and Louisa Degenhardt in The Lancet, again shown on the right-hand side there in 2009, identified several adverse effects associated with cannabis use. A dependent syndrome, increased risk of motor vehicle crashes, impaired respiratory function, cardiovascular disease, adverse effects of regular use on adolescent psychosocial development, and mental health. However, and we need to understand that, however, these harms should not be overstated and they don't affect all users. And secondly, at a community level, the harms associated with cannabis use are less than those associated with alcohol or tobacco. And that's work in The Lancet, published in 2011 and 12 by Professor David Nutt, with two T's. Thirdly, again looking at the safety of medical cannabis, we have to look at studies of the side effects of medical cannabis, not studies of the side effects of recreational cannabis use. And reviews of medical cannabis used under essentially controlled conditions indicate that frequencies of both side effects and dependence are low when you're looking at the effects of medical cannabis when it's used for treatment. We need to compare the side effects of cannabis versus symptoms if there's no treatment versus the side effects of conventional medications. Doctors and pharmacists will require further education about medical cannabis and how to instruct patients in its use, and criteria for patient selections will need development if we go ahead with medical cannabis in South Africa. Fourthly, fourth slide on this, as with opioid analgesics, such as morphine or products containing codeine, the risks of diversion of medical cannabis must be minimized. But it's hard to envision how significant diversion will be necessary when cannabis is very easy to obtain in South Africa anyway. In U.S. states that have passed medical cannabis laws, no increase was found in the prevalence of use overall or among adolescents. That's a publication from 2013. In general, medical cannabis policies reduce cannabis consumption in the general population. But states that allow dispensaries or allow home cultivation can completely offset the positive effects on cannabis consumption in the wider community. So the point being made here is if medical cannabis is made available in South Africa, where it's dispensed, how it's produced, so on, has to be controlled very, very carefully. Otherwise, you're going to get that spill out into the broader population. In the United States, legalization was associated, very interestingly, with an 8 to 11% drop in traffic fatalities. Perhaps people were now smoking cannabis instead of alcohol and not being interested in going out onto the road because they were so chilled. We need to separate out the health effects of synthetic cannabis versus cannabis on its own, you know, smoking cannabis versus the synthetic version, and also whether it's smoked or taken up in other ways. So it's not a simple situation of do we compare smoking cannabis with not. We have to look at various parameters. Thirdly, the cost effectiveness of medical cannabis. There's no data I've seen yet on whether it's cost effective, but it's likely to be very cost effective. However, I was also researching this yesterday. Vaporizers are not cheap, and that's the preferred method of inhalation. You can get even something like a pen, and they cost about $100 for a kit which contains the pen and all the other apparatuses. But maybe $100 is not that expensive if you consider many other medications, and you can keep them for a long time. We need also to look at the issue of supply and regulation. We need to supply consistent, high-quality cannabis leaf. And you can't imagine how many people have been emailing me saying, if South Africa moves forward on this issue, how can they get in on this business? And I've kept them all. Do we import it from other countries in order not to increase production in South Africa? Should the Department of Health get into the business, Dr. Pillay, on producing cannabis? Or should there be a license to South African companies to cultivate and produce in compliance with clear standards and be subject to strict quality control under the Department of Health? So that would probably be the preferred method if, and I say if, the decision to support medical cannabis goes ahead. Particularly as we've heard that my colleague is not keen to get into the business of growing cannabis. The route of administration, smoking, as I've said, is not an accurate dosage method. And I think many doctors do have concerns about medical cannabis. Then I've even spoken to doctors who support legalization of cannabis widely, but don't support medical cannabis, such as the ex-deputy head of the medical journal has that position. And it's not acceptable to many patients, nor is it, as I've said, medically acceptable to some doctors. Oral absorption through pill form is somewhat poor, slow and unpredictable, and some patients feel it's less acceptable, but I'm not sure how good that statement is. Vaporization in an electrically heated vaporizer produces comparable results and is now the preferred method of administration of medical cannabis. It's also, if you go onto the internet, a preferred means of ingestion of certain recreational uses as well. Conclusion. I have two slides here. What is the position of the Medical Research Council? Firstly, we do commend the late MP for bringing attention to the issue of medical cannabis, but we don't support the bill in its current form. We argue that the issue of medical cannabis should be separated from legalization of cannabis or commercial cultivation. And as a public health research organization, we do not support smoking of cannabis for recreational purposes, just as we don't support smoking of tobacco. Thirdly, we acknowledge increasing evidence of the value of medical cannabis using extracts such as oils, tablets, patches, and vaporizers in providing palliative care for various conditions. And that's quite a progressive statement, I believe, for the MRC to be making. But we have a but we recommend a Cochrane review to be undertaken by the SAMRC to evaluate the quality and strength of the evidence for use of cannabinoids, cannabis, for both palliative care and therapeutic use. This would take possibly, it could be done within a year or. And we believe that the Medicines Control Council needs to consider the evidence before registering cannabinoids in South Africa. And we believe it should come before the Medicines Control Council in the medium term. This is not something that we believe should be delayed forever. And South Africa needs to consider it and shouldn't just write this off straight away. Six, we believe the Medical Research Council should take a further role in coordinating further research and clinical trials on the use of medical cannabis broadly, looking at innovative aspects here, looking at use of medical cannabis for palliative care and for treatment. And finally, we believe the MRC should also monitor the possible influences of medical cannabis use on non-medical use of cannabis, especially amongst adolescents. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Professor. We are going to take a short break, and then after that we'll then take questions from members, and how you will then respond, it will depend on you trying to just give you some if members are fine with that, whether we take questions now, break for tea, allow them to rearrange, and on how they are going to respond. Can I just get which is the best route? We listen to, they take all your questions, we break for tea, they arrange, and who is going to respond on what? Remember that we got two presentations, the legal part of it, and then the actual subject for today. Which one is preferable, members? With Honourable Vormick?
May I suggest, Honourable Chair, that we, as you say, first ask our questions now, then break along the team to prepare.
Over to you, Honourable Members. We have been joined by two or three persons. Before questions, I would like to first the ground rules. Guests, don't ask questions, don't use their phones. And if the two gentlemen that, or three that have joined us, I guess, but they will also introduce themselves and so that we are aware who is here from the Medical Research Council. And
good morning, everyone. My name is Niresh Bhagwandin, Executive Manager of Strategic Research Initiatives of the South African Medical Research Council.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Dr. Loach Naidu. I'm an addictionologist working in the field of addiction medicine and rehabilitation in South Africa for the last 24 years. I'm also the immediate past president of the International Narcotics Control Board of the United Nations. And I'm also director and representative director of Julo Foundation, which is a non-profit. Thank you.
I'm not from the MRC. I'm from Times Media Group. I'm a journalist here in Parliament. My name is Mabalo. Thank you.
Hello.
Mabalo Ndenze.
Okay. There's a lady at the back. Can you please use the mic to introduce yourself? Ma'am, please.
Morning, Chair. Morning, members. I'm Gay Davis with Eyewitness News.
Thank you. Honourable members, I can see hands. Honourable James, Honourable Volmik, Honourable Singh, Honourable Maisela, Honourable Ndaba, move in that order. And
thank you very much. I think that's the right one. Thank you very much, and thank you for a very capable presentation. I have some comments and then just one question. The comments are that you are quite right to draw a strict line of separation between the use of marijuana for medical purposes and for the whole question of legalization. For general use. I think that's really important, a distinction. And although my party has not taken a decision on this yet, we'd be much more comfortable with the first part and not the second part. That's the first comment. The second comment is that if it's for medical use, then you clearly need to have a governance structure around production and a supply of high-quality leaf. And the key thing there is that there has to be a robustness in how that's regulated and who regulates it and who controls it. One must be satisfied that there are tested systems for doing that. In our current environment, that is a very important question to ask. The third is that although there seems to be some evidence of successful medical use for marijuana, it's not a cure for cancer, and it cannot be a cure for cancer because we haven't solved the science problem of what causes cancer. And without going into a long lecture about it, we know that cancer is a consequence of unregulated cell duplication that is triggered by genetic malfunction that can be a result of chemical interference and is also inherited. So the cells don't know when to stop when you get a tumor. And why that happens is not entirely clear. So it's what scientists call, as you know, an intractable problem. It's not that science cannot solve it. It cannot solve it at this stage, although it's done it for some forms of viral cancer. And the reason why I ask that question is that that second part is something that the science community and medical community of South Africa has to focus on as well. Because, look, the science is a global enterprise, so there's far more advances done in the north on the cancer problem. And one doesn't want to be parochial and nationalistic about it. But there's a contribution South African science can make in this area, and our country has to invest in it. So support for this particular bill, in whatever form, must be accompanied by another enterprise, which is to make sure that this is expensive, as you know, that the Medical Research Council costs a lot of money to do this kind of research, is that there has to be investment in finding a cure for those kinds of cancers that South Africans are prone to. So those are my comments, more than questions. I did have one little question about the point you're making about it was on these slides are not numbered, but it's the point about cannabis not being approved for medical use by the US FDA, and where you say that there are inconsistencies in the main chemical compound, especially when smoked. I'm not sure what you mean by that. Are you saying there's instability in the chemical compounds or inconsistencies? What exactly is the problem? The US FDA is pretty strict in terms of what it registers, and therefore, if there's a problem around inconsistencies, that's one issue. If it's instability in the chemical compound, that's another issue. If you can just explain that to me.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you for those presentations. Just three very quick questions. The advocate Buka spoke about the fact that cannabis is illegal as a certainty in the current sort of legal framework. However, if memory serves me correct, I think it was the Department of Health that spoke to this committee about the fact that there is in fact a dispensation under very specific conditions for medical practitioners to prescribe cannabinoids. And if that already exists, it then speaks to one of the stated purposes of the bill, which is the regulation of cannabis. Maybe a review of the current regulations would suffice to cover that point, the first part of that point, as opposed to new law. So that's the first question, if you can get clarity on that. The second question is, what is the risk of substance dependence amongst cannabis users as compared to nicotine containing substances like cigarette users and people consuming alcohol? In other words, is there a high risk of substance dependence? And then the third question is, amotivational syndrome has been associated with cannabis use. We know that there have been studies around poor scholastic performance, for example. But how prevalent is that amongst cannabis users? Because if it is high, it has an impact not just on the individual in terms of their progression, but also unemployment and economic impact, etc., etc. Thank you.
Honorable Singh.
Yeah, thank you very much, Honorable Chairperson. Good morning, everybody. And Chairperson, firstly, may I thank you and your committee for bringing together such a high-profile group of medical people and legal people to talk about this. And, you know, I've realized in the last few months that cannabis is really not a swear word, because normally it's a swear word. But now, from what you have been presenting to us, it's certainly not a swear word. And I thank the advocate and the professor for the presentation. But just to pick up on the point that the honorable colleague picked up as a point of departure, from research we have done, from opinions we have received, we believe that the Section 21, as is contained in the Act of 1965, would not allow, although you can prescribe, but it would not allow the use of cannabis for any other, for treatment. And maybe you can give us your opinion on that. I've got a position paper on that particular aspect, which we'll discuss at another time, Chairperson. I don't think it is for now. What I'd like to know, Honorable Advocate, if we had to go with medical research using cannabis, with all the checks and balances that Professor James has mentioned, and regulations and strict regulations, would the current legal prescripts that we have in the country allow for that to happen? Is there legislation? Because you said it's illegal. Possession and use is illegal. So would current legislation allow that? That's my first question. And then we agree that there's a very, very important distinction which you've highlighted between the use for recreational use, religious use, industrial use, and medical use. And we also accept that there isn't a cure for cancer, although maybe since the MRC people are here, you could tell us whether, Chairperson, through you, whether you are doing any research in that regard. Because I think that's the first prize, to look for a cure for cancer, because millions of people are dying of cancer in our country. And then the last one is, from your view and opinion, I mean, plants, whether it's cannabis or any other plants, to what extent are plants used in the manufacture of medicines in our country and around the world? Thank you.
Honorable Mason.
Thank you, Chair. I think it's very important to emphasize that we should separate the commercialization of dacha or marijuana or cannabis and the medical use from the beginning. We can't legislate for commercialization. It's not in a sphere of our competence. So that is a no-go area from the start. That is done and buried. And for the medical use of cannabinoids, it is very important to realize that we can't legislate on the strength of anecdotal evidence and not empirical research evidence. That should be done even before we can bring the bill back to consider it on the strength of research that can prove empirically, not just anecdotal things that, well, this and that. That is not what we are here. I mean, all this, I think the scientific minds that are concentrated in this room would like to consider empirical evidence, not anecdotal evidence, and waste their time arguing on that. So let's go back and do research and come back with evidence that are not researched on a text on a desktop, but that is done and that can be validated and defended. And there is a Cochrane review that must be actually pursued and done, and so that we can actually compare with what others. But the important thing is for our own scientists here to do research and come back with evidence that can be defended and that can be also be aligned with the international best standards. And so there is no prescription of use of cannabinoids, as far as I know. You apply case by case, and that is not prescribed. So it's not as illegal and people want to make it to be. If you apply, and your application is, sure, it's not going to be rejected. And I've never heard of any application being rejected. So this has been used, case-by-case application. But if you just say anybody can possess and use, and you feel you may be having cancer in the back, you better smoke dacha. And we don't want to use a Trojan horse type of thing where we open the sluice gates and the horse comes in, and you can't close the door once it's bolted. So let us use our scientific minds to come up with scientific answers to this question. Thank you.
Honorable Ndaba.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I think I still believe that dacha cannot cure cancer. whether you say cannabis or whatever, but it's dacha. It cannot cure cancer. But Chair, I think I agree in terms of pain management. Because obviously, Chair, any substance that you use, you know, it makes you like a drunk of some sort. So you can't feel pain. Chair, with the experience that I have of people that are smoking dacha, I don't think, Chair, that there's any stage where I will agree that we can legislate such a bill. Because, Chair, if the professor can just do us a favor, take people who've been smoking dacha, Chairperson. You know, in our language, there's something that grows under the feet of those people. And we call it impehla. I don't know in English, but we call it impehla. So it, that on its own, it tells you that insango has an impact, a hazardous health effect to a human body. I'm not convinced, Chairperson. But in terms of pain management, and also, Chair, you know, it confuses. You know, if this bill was talking of medicine only, I'm sure I was going to think, you know, especially out of the some of the things that the professor have presented in terms of the experience from other countries. But the mere fact that it wants to commercialize and industrialize in dacha, Chairperson, I cannot agree on that one. You know, Chairperson, there are many people who are smoking it, and they are smoking it illegally. And you know what happens after they smoke dacha. Thanks, Chair.
Honorable Mashalela? No, she is.
No, thanks, Chair. I'll just quickly, firstly, welcome the input and the presentations that has been made. Well, I'll go to the recommendations. I just want to get the clarity. Because you say you agree on the process that has been initiated, but you are not supporting the bill in its current form, and the argument about the current form is the inclusion of the commercialization purposes. So does that mean that if we remove or delete or take away the commercialization and industrialization purposes, will you support the bill? That's one. And if it's not used for smoking purposes, will you support it if regulations is put in such a way that whoever prescribes it is not prescribed in terms of using it for smoking purposes? Will you then say, no, it's fine, the bill can proceed? And then the issue that the Honorable Valmik raised, which the matter that the department presented in MRC, you know, MCC, in the committee before you, their argument was that the issue that Honorable Volmik raised, that the current legislation and regulation does provide for the legalization, for the usage of cannabis, and in their view it is sufficient, because medical professional can prescribe, and the accounting officer, which is the DG, has the authority to approve the usage. And therefore, once approved, then anybody can acquire it and use it according to how it has been prescribed by the medical profession. in your view, do you think that is insufficient? And if you think that is insufficient, do you think this one addresses that particular matter? Or what are the weaknesses and the gap in the current legislation? So that we understand whether we need to improve that current legislation, if there are weaknesses into it, if there are gaps that you feel needs to be closed, or we need completely a new legislation altogether. And lastly, on the research, there is a view that we need to establish some centers for research, and we are there as the Medical Research Council. What is your position on that? Because I've not said anything. Well, the legal person did say something, but from you as a clinical people, you haven't said about it before. What is your view about the bill proposing that there must be some research, one or two centers that will be dedicated for research? Vis-a-vis your existence, and what is your view on that particular matter, so that we understand whether we need additional, because maybe you don't have the necessary capacity as the Medical Research Council, then you will need your capacity to be beefed up through this process, or there is other process that we can do to make sure that we build capacity to yourself so that you are able to undertake this research and make sure that by the time you arrived at what Honorable Magisela is raising, you have then able to produce some clinical evidence that will then assist us to take a particular position on this matter. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Honorable Members. On my side, it's only... unfortunately, your presentation is not numbered, and it's difficult. It's quite an effort to really point into what one wants to speak to. But I'll just be referring to pain management. I would have appreciated that as the Medical Research Council, you would have come with an evidence of drugs that are being used as we speak in terms of pain management. Morphine, pathogene, how much cannabis is, if there is the amount dosage in those. So that we are engaged on information that is there. So I would have appreciated if you would have done that. That is my comment or a question, but that's what I wanted to reflect on. Well, some of the issues that have been referred on, Honorable Volmik and Honorable Mahlalela have asked, was that's what was also in my mind, that in fact we're talking about something that is being done. There's a prescription, but a person must follow a particular process in this country. The issue of it being commercialized, I think it's not for us. There is a committee that deals with trade, which is trade and industry. But I think you have heard what members' views are saying in terms of that, because we've got different experiences. If I can just indulge, different experiences on people that are smoking dacha. We have experiences. We have nursed them. We have laid them out. We have counseled families. So it's quite a very sensitive, traumatic, an emotive subject, the issue of, if I can use Honorable Ndaba's term, because that's how we used to term it. To us, it's dacha. Whether you use this medical sophisticated words, but for us, it's and what in the community is being known. So if you can just clarify some of those issues that we have raised, which we think that when dealing with this, we can't paper over them. We have to lay them bare so that as we move forward, the country understand exactly what is it that we are talking about in terms of this. We will break for tea, which is then going to allow you time, who is going to respond on what. The tea break will be 10 minutes. Thank you very much. Tea is outside.